Hey, hey, Heat Nation. Welcome back to Heaters Gonna Heat. I'm your host, Kyle Russell. Still here to chat a little about our favorite NBA team, the Miami Heat. Coming off a pretty predictable beatdown for Game 1 against the Boston Celtics yesterday. I'll talk a little bit about that. And then later part of the episode, we'll look ahead to Game 2 on Wednesday. Just taking these game by game, trying to go at a little bit of a quicker pace so that hopefully it's a little bit better of a view of a listening experience. At least better than what we're getting in the game so much. But jumping right into it, let's go first. Game 1 yesterday, Sunday, against the Boston Celtics, where Miami lost 94-114. Looking at the injury report, there was nothing unexpected. We knew Rozier was going to be out going in. We knew Butler was going to be out this entire series. Did get Duncan playing. That was good. So that was maybe a little bit of a question there, but he did play Friday night, so I expect him to play Sunday. But nothing unexpected. And then no injuries throughout the game. So, yay. We got through a game with no injuries. Enjoy the little victories. But for the Heat's rotation, they would go 9 deep. Same starting five that they've been rolling out recently. Hero, Martin, Bam, Jovic. Well, Hake is in place of Butler. That's the one most recent change. So, same lineup that they rolled out Friday that they also rolled out today. And then coming off the bench, Haywood Highsmith, Kevin Love, DeLon Wright, and Duncan Robinson. To recap the game itself very quickly, because it was, again, bit of a beatdown. Right out the gate, Celtics started on a 14-0 run, so by the time the Heat even scored, they were already down double digits. But the Heat did take advantage later on in the first quarter when the Celtics went to their bench, just grinding down their bench unit to get the deficit down to 5 after the first quarter. And you could feel the arena there getting a little quiet. But again, you made the units off the bench unit. You got to do it once the starters come back in. And beginning of the second quarter, with the starters back in and taking most of the attention, it allowed Sam Hauser to just catch fire in a very Batum-esque fashion, like what happened with the Sixers last Wednesday night, where, you know, you're making life hell for Tatum and Brown, but then they just kick it out to a wide-open Hauser because the defense has been shifted to the more prominent players in Brown and Tatum. So then Hauser's a wide open three, nails him. Next thing we know, leads back up to double digits. The Heat never got to single digits, eventually being down 15 at the half. But again, all things considered, not the worst place to be in, right? You saw a little competitiveness at the end of the first, and you could sit there and say, hey, so long as Sam Hauser doesn't keep this going, maybe we can do something in the second half. Despite their best efforts, though, the Heat just continued to fall behind as the Celtics just reined in threes through the third quarter, while Miami themselves, was not only were they not making threes, but it eventually got to the point that, like, Celtics players weren't even closing out. They were just like, you know what? Oh, you kicked it out to a wide-open guy in the corner. Go ahead, Bam Adebayo or Caleb Martin or whoever else is open in the corner. Take it. And the Heat weren't making them pay for it in the third. Well, throughout the game for the most part, but especially in the third, as the Heat got outscored by, I think, like, 17, because they were down 32 going into the fourth. And again, it was one of those both ends, right? The opponent's making a ton of threes. If you're making no threes, then you just look bad on both ends of the court. It was like 91-59 or something going into the fourth. And then during the fourth quarter, for whatever amount of worth it is, because again, you're going down 32 going into it, the game's over at that point. But DeLon Wright and the Heat did at least catch a little fire in the fourth, trimming that lead down below 20, which again says something. They went in down 32 to get it down to 20, is at least plus 12 for the quarter. And I think they got as close as 12 late into the fourth, but again, not really in a position to truly be threatening. Though again, kind of like near the end of the first, you could feel a little tension in the arena, like, hey, are we really, really going to blow this in the fourth? But no, not with a 32-point lead. Like I said, Heat trimmed it down to like 12 or something like that, but then collapsed in the last minute or so, eventually leading it back to a 20-point loss. So, who played well for this game? I do have some players that did play well, I think. First up, and who I would give player of the game, for Miami side at least, Jaime Jaquez. 16 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal on 8-16 from the field, though 0-2 from 3-point range, and no free throws. But just stayed aggressive. Like, he at least came ready to play and willing to throw everything he had out onto the court. I remember one play in particular, I think it was like late third, early fourth. Like, the game was more or less out of hand, but Jaquez just takes it from the outbound because the Celtics have just scored. And just like, oh, none of the Celtics, they're just being lackadaisical because they're up so much. Cool. And Hawkins just ran it right down their throat for a score. It was an okay efficiency night for Hawkins. And again, no threes, no free throws. So there's definitely areas that you could have done more in. But just like at his most base level, which is just like, Hawkins, get out there and run, attack the rim, and do whatever, just leave it all out on the court. Hawkins looked great there. Outside of him, Bam Adebayo, still good stat line, 24 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists on an efficient 10-18 from the field, though 0-2 from 3-point range, but a perfect 4-4 from the free throw line. That's been good. Definitely looked like a day he had his jumper going both in the mid-range and at the free throw line, but still, for the most part, didn't really do enough against Boston to like make them double him, and therefore he could like kick out to get some easier looks. Like, now, for the most part, he was pretty well contained. Again, Statline looks good. A good chunk of that is coming from the fourth as well, when things loosened up. But for the most part, I think Bam still had a great game, especially on the defensive end. And then, again, whatever he gave on the offensive end just is always a bonus on top. DeLon Wright, have to mention him, 17 points, 1 rebound, 3 assists, 2 steals on 6-7 from the field, 5-5 from 3-point range. But again, most of that production, the 5-5 from the 3-point, I know for sure, all in the fourth quarter. So how much of that can he really take as being meaningful or not? I'm not sure. But hey, can't deny that he looked in good rhythm by the end of the fourth quarter. Maybe something that could carry over into other games. And then last on like the who played well list, Kevin Love's. Though not a big productive line, 7 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists on 3-4 from the field, 1-2 from 3-point range, no free throws. But did it all in 13 minutes. So relative to the minute load, pretty good production. And again, still looked effective out there. Though, again, 13 minutes, that's where you think, like, all right, maybe that could be some opportunity to try to get some more minutes out there for him. Who didn't play well? Well, I got to go right back to him. Tyler Hero, who feels like he's oscillating between the problem for why Miami ends up losing or the reason why Miami's winning. Like, Philly lost in large part because of him. Bulls won in large part because of him. And this kind of same thing here. Tyler Hero, 11 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal on 4-13 from the field, 3-9 from 3-point range, no free throws. And again, the situation like with the Sixers where he got good looks. He got good looks and he took them and, you know, commend him for getting the open look and taking the open look. But you got to criticize him when it doesn't go down. And at a certain point, that's just what you need to have happen. As I've said multiple times in the last few podcasts, you want to be an elite player, make the open looks. That's like a bare minimum thing. Without going too hard on Hero, though, and trying to share it around a little bit, Haywood Highsmith, also not a great game. 0 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 0-4 from the field, all of which are 3-point attempts. And later on in the game, essentially looked like he got to the point that he was just second-guessing himself. Like, he would get the swing, he'd have an open look at 3, and he'd hesitate for that split second. Well, now the closeout's in on you, and they're forcing you to drive inside and doing other things that you're not familiar with. Highsmith just needs to throw that out the window and be like, look, anytime I get an open look, just let it fly. Nobody's going to kill you over it. And then last on the who didn't play well list, Caleb Martin. 4 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists on 2-6 from the field, 0-4 from 3-point range. So right there between Martin and Highsmith, you're 0-8 from 3-point range from 2 of your wings. Obviously going to make things difficult. And I'll take this moment just to address a play that was going around social media. Another stupid social media play where people want to try to point at Heat players and be like, oh, they're dirty. Because they clipped out where it looks like Caleb Martin is like hard boxing out Jason Tatum, like undercutting him as if he's trying to hurt him. But then you zoom out, you extend out the replay, and you see that Drew Holiday is pushing Caleb Martin into Jason Tatum, something that was mentioned not only just by obviously us Heat fans, but even like Celtics big mega fan Bill Simmons himself is like, no, Drew Holiday pushed Caleb Martin into Jason Tatum. So I don't like that it looks like we're just going to be doing this every single game of just like Celtics fans micro-analyzing every single thing that the Heat do to try to make them look dirty when they clip it. But it seems like that's just going to be the case. So just going to have to deal with that as well. I would like things to be better and just be like, hey, this is a rivalry where these two teams are going to be chippy with each other. It's going to be physical, and it's a playoff series. But nah, it seems like we're doing stupid shit instead. All I would ask the Heat fans is just be better than this. So with that, that's seven of the nine players in Miami's rotation covered between who played well and who didn't. That just leaves Duncan Robinson, who had an okay game, but still for the most part looks injured, low productivity. I think it was like 2 of 4 from three-point range on like 15-ish minutes or something. Again, Duncan doesn't really look right, but yeah, at the point, I'm sorry, man, you're a body and you can get out there, so get out there. And then Jovic was okay, I think, relative to expectations. 20-year-old in his first playoff game. Not really efficient, not really as bad as like what Martin or Highsmith did. Just kind of okay. So that covers Miami's nine rotation players. And then going over some stats in this game real quick. If you just look at the field goal percentage, it really does not seem that bad. Miami went 38-81 from the field, good for 47%, versus Boston's 39-82, good for 48%. But then you scratch your head, right? Like, hold on, this is a 20-point loss. How did that happen? Well, of those field goal attempts from three-point range, Miami 12 of 37, good for 32%, so below average, but at least it's not, like, abysmal. You're not in the 20s. Versus the Celtics, 22 of 49, good for 45%. That's a three-point attempt rate, you know, the amount of three-point attempts per field goal, of 45% for Miami versus 60% for the Celtics. So, again, Miami, like, they took a significant amount of volume from their three, shot it a little bit below average, and let's be honest, the fourth quarter helped boost those numbers versus the Celtics, which is taking tons of threes and making tons of threes, and yeah, that's a big part of it. So, what is that? Plus 10 on made three-pointers right there. So, even if you assume Miami still got the field goals to match, that's a plus 10 just from the fact that they got, you know, 10 more made threes. Then the other part of this, Miami, though a perfect 6-6 from the free throw line, got outscored by the Celtics 14-16. So you think plus 10 off of made threes, plus 8 off of made free throws. That's 18 and a 20-point loss right there. Pretty easy. For something positive, Miami did win fast break points, 13-6, which is that's usually been a problem against this Celtics team. Though the counter argument, a good chunk of that was in the fourth quarter as well. So how much of that was really true over the course of the game? Miami did also win points in the paint, 44-24. Like they really did a good job of shutting off Boston at the rim. I think they were below 50% on rim attempts, something like that. But the counter argument there, Boston didn't need to go inside because their 3-point shooting was doing so well. And then last one, and I do think this is like a relevant stat at least. The Celtics last played like a week ago, and even then, that's just like technically they played a week ago. In terms of like a serious game, it's probably been weeks since they've put in legitimate effort just because they've had the first seed wrapped up for so long. Meanwhile, the Heat played Friday night, and it was about a 40-hour turnaround to Sunday, right? The rest advantage was all in the Celtics. And again, that's why even going into that game, beyond just the statistical look, we expected to get smacked in game one. The thing that we were always looking for, and where I think might have seen a little bit, especially late in the first and a little bit in the fourth, was just some ways, some areas where Miami could be competitive in this series. Moving on now to talk game two. So first, the injury report. There's been no updates yet if Rozier will be back, definitely not for game two. No word yet if he'll even be on game three. That's about it for the injury report, right? Because we already know Jimmy's going to be out this series. Josh has been out all year, blah, 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 etc. So, moving right on then, game two, Wednesday night, still at the Boston Celtics. Looking at the injury report also for Boston side of things, Luke Kornet, backup center for them, is injured. I mean, I wouldn't really consider that a major part of their rotation. I guess he could be a ninth man for them, but like, That's the kind of things we're talking about, right? Boston Celtics, it's like, all right, maybe their ninth man's out on the Heat side of things. Yeah, Jimmy, their best player's out, and their starting point guard's probably going to continue to be out. Just been that kind of year. That's how the die rolled out. So looking at this game from the standpoint of, like, what kind of adjustments can Miami make from the first game to the second game? Well, first on the offensive side. And you know, it's always feels reductionist to say this, but it's like shoot more threes and hope to convert more. Miami had good looks. Haywood Highsmith had some good looks. Tyler Herro had some good looks. Caleb Martin had some good looks. They just weren't knocking them down. And sometimes that's how it is, and sometimes the easiest adjustment is just, you know, make them next time. But I do think Miami could make a little bit of an effort, maybe to get a little bit closer to like 50% from three-point attempt rate, just something to try to up the variance, because I mean that's one of the ways that lesser talented teams beat more talented teams. You up the three-point variance. The problem, though, obviously being that Boston also ups the variance in their favor as well. More offensive adjustments. Highsmith, he just needs to let it rip regardless. I mentioned that already in the last segment, but Highsmith's role is 3 and D. We know he brings the defense. He's got to bring the 3, at least from a volume perspective. Even if the shot doesn't go in, again, nobody's going to kill him over it. That the only way we win right now is if he starts making 3s. I do think there could be some more minutes allocated for Kevin Love as well, even if that means, you know, playing him alongside Bam Adebayo. Maybe you have a situation where, like, Caleb Martin or Haywood Highsmith, they just don't seem to have it, or Jovic has having a particularly bad game, and then you can take some of their minutes and shift that towards Love. Again, even if you just do Bam Love front court, I mean, at least Kevin Love can knock down the 3. He'll take it, so that could be something. Just see what you have left in Kevin Love. And then the last potential offensive adjustment that I can think of, at least for now, would be to swap DeLon Wright into the starting lineup for Caleb Martin. Mainly going off the idea that Wright looked like he got himself into a good rhythm Sunday night. Maybe that carries over Wednesday. I mean, he's still going to bring the defense for sure. Maybe a little bit undersized compared to Martin, but still point of attack defense, which is primarily what Martin's in the starting lineup for. So you can replicate some of the defense, maybe get a little bit more of an offensive edge with Wright out there instead. Again, could be worth something. Just because, you know, very quickly we're reaching, throw the kitchen sink out at it. For the defensive side of things, I really do think that the Heat's game plan was solid enough. Like, Tatum had a really inefficient night from the field. He did make up for it by getting to the free throw line, like 8-8 from the line, and still finished with like a 20-point triple-double because he was able to get to the other areas. But in general, he was an inefficient from the field, and then that was something that worked in Miami's favor, except for the part where he then kicked it out and ends up getting into Sam Hauser's hands, and he torches us from 3. So, for the most part, game plan went well. It's pretty much just like daring the bench players to continue to be ridiculously hot like they ended up being in that game. And they were great. It's kind of the same thing with the Sixers. Kind of just tip your hat. Okay, well, at least the best players for the other team didn't kill us. It was just these random scrub Heat killers instead. So, outside of that, I would think maybe run less zone, just because that zones tend to give up three-pointers, and Boston was doing a good job of swinging the ball around the perimeter to open three-point shooters. Again, look at Sam Hauser there. So, if the zone's not going to work, then just don't run it. Maybe run more man coverage, and at least try to, you know, control the amount of three-point volume that the Celtics are doing. So that way they don't end up with a 60% three-point attempt rate. Try to pull them closer to 50. So if both teams are shooting around 53% rate, I think that's at least more in Miami's favor. So with that all said, what kind of expectations do I have for Game 2? Honestly, I still think we go in there and get smacked. For the most part, I'm just looking to see if the Heat can get it more competitive throughout the game. Again, you saw the little flashes in Game 1, like mostly at the end of the first quarter. So can they build upon that? Can they not, you know, get out down 14 to start the game? Can they maybe get out only down 8 to start the game? And then maybe they can get a lead eventually at one point as well. And then you just start stacking little by little, and then maybe around late Game 3 or Game 4, we can get a win out of this. So that's just what I'm looking for. Just, again, can Miami's youth be competitive? One of the things that I did see from Wes Goldberg from Locked On Heat put on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, the other day, that I thought was very interesting. Miami's new starting lineup, again, this is Herro, Martin, Jovic, Hakez, Bam, have an average age of like 24-2 or something around there. Which is not that, it's essentially comparable to some other really young teams like the Indiana Pacers, the Orlando Magic, and the OKC Thunder. The Thunder, they're in even farther crazy, like 22 average age. But versus, say, like the Celtics, who average age is starting lineup is 28. And then when you look at the Heat's lineup as well, their average age is being pulled up by Caleb Martin. So again, this is just to say, to better illustrate, this is a really young roster, especially the starting lineup that the Heat are throwing out there. So we want to just see that young lineup be competitive now, and that can build upon for later seasons. So other things to look forward in Game 2, Celtics, by their construction, are built to go off from three at least one game a series. I mean, they at least got that first game, so maybe there's some variance that'll come back towards Miami's way where they have, I don't know, maybe something like a 13-40 game or something like that. What would that be? So it's like 32.5%, I think. Yeah, I would take that. At the very least, would be a more competitive game. And then last thing I expect to see Game 2, just the Heat to try to muck things up a little bit more. Again, I do not mean to be dirty about this. I just mean to be physical, as we would expect for a physical game like basketball to be played. Not trying to get out there and injure anybody, but just, like, get up into their chest on drives, pressure the ball, even full court. Just whatever kind of legal, non-injury tricks that can be used just to try to slow things down, muck things up, and get this more into the mud. That's where the Heat will, I think, have their best chance to pull out a surprise win. So after the game on Wednesday, I'll be back Thursday to recap Game 2 and preview Game 3, which will be on Saturday. For now, I do thank you for hanging around. That'll be all for this episode. Please, if you can, follow the pod at Heaters Heating and myself at KBR Heat Culture. Also, check out the other great pods we have at OTG Basketball, Celtics Lab if you want their side of things, Brooklyn Buzz, Full Access Pacers. Links for everything are in the show notes as usual. I'll be back on Thursday. So until then, hope you all have a great one, Heat Nation.